Okay, members, should we make a start? Because it's quite a long agenda, although I'm sure we can dispatch it quite efficiently. Item number one, Chairman's notices, those are listed. I don't propose to read them. Item two, apologies for absence.
Yes, Chairman. Apologies have been received from Councillor Sacevedo, Councillor Beale, Councillor Hurd and Councillor Shrimpton. And Councillor Boyce is attending as substitute for Councillor Shrimpton and Councillor Shaughnessy is attending as substitute for Councillor Hurd. Thank you.
Anything else for Councillor Miss Lewis?
No, I was ahead of myself.
Excellent. Okay. And minutes of the last meeting. To confirm the minutes of the meeting of the Finance and Corporate Services Committee held on the 20th of July. Agreed?
No. Agreed. That's where I was.
Lewis.
Yes. Okay. Apologies for absence. It says apologies for absence were received from Councillor Miss M.R. Lewis and I didn't send apologies.
Yeah. That's right, we did receive them from someone, but not from...
I think they were received, whether they were sent or not, but I'm sure the minutes can be...
Had I sent them, they could have been received. If they were received from anybody other than me, they were a fake.
Councillor Fluke, you seem to have some ideas on this front.
Oh, Chairman, as usual, Councillor Lewis is absolutely correct, but I do think we need to visit this perhaps after the meeting, because the rules about sending substitutes, and I believe this was... not fake news, but a fake substitute. And I think we do need to revisit them, because I understand once the substitute's made, you can't revert it, but I'm sure...
I think once a valid substitution is made, it can't be taken back, but at the same time, if a substitution is made without a member having given their apologies, and I think that was the point, that was the position we were in at the last meeting, there was some confusion as to whether the member had given their apologies, and therefore whether we're in a position to actually accept a substitution. I accept that once a substitution is given, if the member then decides that actually they're going to come to the meeting, it's too late. But I think everyone's clear on what happened. Okay, apart from that, are those agreed?
Agreed.
Excellent. Disclosure of interest. Disclose the existence and nature of any disclosable pecuniary interest, other pecuniary interests, or non-pecuniary interest relating to items of business on the agenda having regard to paragraph 6 to 8 inclusive of the Code of Conduct for members. Anything? Councillor Fluker?
Chairman, agenda item 16. In the interest of openness and transparency, I know a person who is mentioned in the report, Chairman.
So, which report?
Green.
16. Oh, 16. Okay, very good. Any others? Okay, excellent. Chairman's good news announcements. I haven't been given anything additional, so it's the usual good news. I think there's one item that's actually going to be withdrawn from the agenda.
Shall I just talk to you?
Which exactly Ms. Foy can briefly comment on.
So the first item is agenda item 7, which is the income share for the Malden Mud Race. Following the Community Services Committee, I've done some research and I've also spoken to Mr. Farrington of the Malden Mud Race Company and agreed that with your permission this report will be deferred until the Malden Mud Race Company complete their return on the Charities Commission website and file their accounts for the year ending 2016.
Agreed.
Very good. Okay.
Can I do the second one as well?
Why not?
And then the second item, which is agenda item 10, just in advance of this meeting, I've been informed of some potential changes on the overdue process and thresholds, which I think need to be looked into before we approve this. So I think... really, I'm suggesting that members propose and agree that this replacement commission and procurement strategy comes back to the next meeting when we've checked out the goods and services element and the whether all of the OG thresholds and processes still apply.
Is it agreed to defer those two items, members, until the next meeting? Councillor Durham.
Just reverting back to the last item, I wonder if Ms. Foy could tell us when the last accounts for Malden Mud Race Company were filed, please.
Ms. Foy.
The last accounts filed are the year ending 2015 with Companies House. That's what Companies House are reporting. We were provided with the accounts for the year ending 2016, but for whatever reason, they don't seem to have made themselves... across to College Companies House and therefore not showing on the website. There is currently an application to strike off due to the delays in providing those accounts and information to Companies House.
Okay, with those two deferrals, move on to item 8, the supplementary estimate project 180. Ms. Foy.
Thank you. I'll just find my page.
Page 43.
Thank you. So, agenda item 8 refers to project 180 St. Sed's car park and the changes of the ground floor of the building. In the main, this was completed in 2016-17. The project did incur a significant overspend of approximately £50,000, and various reports were brought to this committee detailing the overspends during the course of the last financial year. Overview and scrutiny are now looking at the key reasons for the overspend, with a final report to go to their December meeting and actually an interim report to go to the October meeting. The majority of the work was completed on St. Sed's in the car park, with the exception of the lighting columns, the safety barriers and the road markings. This was to do with elements and delays within the planning permission process. These elements have been costed at £9,500, and a supplementary capital estimate is therefore sought from members this evening.
Councillor Fluker.
Chairman, one for the Director of Resources. Does the £50,950 also take into consideration the additional work that was carried out by the caretakers in an overtime situation using materials purchased elsewhere? And as far as 3.6 is concerned, this does concern me slightly, because the type of work that we're talking about here, I would have thought that estimates wouldn't have been the right thing to seek. We should be asking for contractual estimates based on the provision of a contract for supply and install. I'm sure that's just a typo, and I'm sure that the 151 officer will be able to reassure me that that is the case. Thank you.
Yes, I believe that we've actually gone out in terms of the lighting columns and the marking out to quotation on those, and this is the results of that. The £50,000 does not include the overtime paid to the caretakers.
Councillor Miss Lewis.
I'm surprised that the additional work needed to finish this is going to be amount to £9,500. It actually doesn't seem like a huge amount of money to me. Has it been fully scoped? Have the estimates or quotations been given actually been itemised? Because I would hate for this, for the work to start and then for it to have to come back to us again. For even more money, I'd much rather that we had a realistic quote in the first place. But when we consider those of us that have sat on the local highways panel for any length of time, and we start to look at the cost of putting in lighting posts and barriers and that kind of thing, we run into tens of thousands of pounds. So are we quite sure that this has been properly scoped?
So the cost of the lighting columns is based on the same cost of the other lighting columns that we use in this car park. So for example, we've just had to replace one down by the members' car parking, or contract for that, certainly when it was knocked over by a vehicle. In terms of the barriers, what this actually refers to is wooden safety fencing around the edge of that car park, because there is a dip in terms of the land where it drops down behind it, and then the road markings, that's so, I mean, having looked at it, it appears to be adequate, but I'm happy to write an email of confirmation with a breakdown to members tomorrow, if that's helpful.
But to your point, Ms. Lewis, I mean, I think this is the last time we're going to have a report on this car park. I don't think I would want to take another one, and I'm sure that members of this committee wouldn't want to take another one either. I got the sense that actually this was additional work that essentially had been scoped after the project had been completed, based on additional kind of health and safety concerns, rather than stuff that actually was planned almost from the start, but for which the planning permission was delayed, which I guess is the impression that's now given. And so really this should have been included in the previous supplementary estimate, notwithstanding the planning was delayed. We certainly don't want to see any more supplementary estimates in relation to this particular project, I think. Councillor Elliott, were you going to come back?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. excuse me. I'd like to pick up on something that Councillor Fluke asked about the overtime being included. I guess this is probably sensitive information. Will it be included in the report to OIS?
It's not currently an interim report, but I can certainly include it in the final report, definitely. That's fine.
Okay, with those comments, is that agreed or noted? Thank you, members. Sorry, it has to, the supplementary estimate has to be agreed, I should say.
Agreed.
Excellent. On to annual review of financial regulations, pages 45 to 106.
Thank you. So each year we review our financial regulations, and this time there's a bit of tidying up which we needed to do. Really, the key changes in terms of this are shown at page 46, but to discuss the most important ones, the organisation terminology had not been updated to refer to three directors and chief executive for CLT. An additional delegation has been included for when directors are sick. And in terms of the inventory register, and really on the inventory register, we're mainly talking about sort of TIC stock. It's making sure that stock is recorded on the inventory register where it reaches above £500. That was recommended by a recent internal audit report into stock and inventory. So those are the three key changes, but then in addition to that, all of the little detailed ones are shown on page 46 in the changes log.
Members, this is fairly straightforward and procedural, apparently not. Councillor Ms Lewis.
Thank you. I've got quite a lot of concern about this, because the area that I don't feel we've ever sufficiently addressed, in my opinion, is when we're working in partnership. And I think that starts at about page 46 of the annex, as opposed to page 46 of this. I'm thinking particularly about the way the Magnox funding, for example, had been handled in the past, when one person seemed to be able to make decisions quite away from the finance director, who said they had no remit over it, and when members queried it, members were told that it had nothing to do with members. And yet we now find out from these regulations that actually whenever we've got any partnership funding or partnership delivered operation, it should run down the same sorts of rules that we lay out, and it clearly didn't. I was thinking about centre place funding specifically. So who actually, when we've got partnership funding coming in, yes, it's not been generated from our public purse, but it's money that has been, in my view, entrusted to us to spend for public good. Who ultimately oversees it? Where are the key controls? Who selects the budget manager? And there's actually elements within this where you can't decide who owns which bit of the funding. And I think that whenever we have contracts like this, I'm just trying to find it. I think it is about page 46. Section E. I've not got to grips with making this. It either works too fast for me or doesn't work quickly enough.
Page 95, if you want.
95, thank you. We need, in my view, when we have an arrangement like this, to have a very, very clear understanding. Officers might do, members certainly didn't last time, of who owns which bit, who's going to be responsible for which bit, whether or not it appears on our risk register, and whether or not we have any rights at all as members to ask questions about the way the funding's being used, because in the past we have been told that we can't do that. It tells you that your partners in 1.2.3, partners participate by acting as project deliverers or sponsors, or acting as project funders or part funders. I imagine that if we had asked this at the time, we would have been told that sense of place wasn't our project, so that's why it didn't follow our rules. So you can imagine that I think it's most important encouraging joint working, promoting sharing of information, skills and everything else. It's about dealing with things confidently. And if you look at 1.3.1, key controls, D, to agree and accept formally the roles and responsibilities for each of the partners involved before the project commences. Because clearly we had a situation there where a project actually completely ran away from this authority. And I don't think this is strong enough, and I don't think that we've addressed that situation adequately.
Ms. Foy.
Thank you. So there's two sections which potentially deal with that. The section that you've highlighted, which is E1, and then also E2, which is around specifically around external funding. I think what is key and generally the case, especially around partnership funding or grant funding, is that the Section 151 officer is ultimately responsible for how that funding is spent, and that it complies either with the terms and conditions of the grant, eligibility criteria, or anything set out in that original partnership development or partnership arrangement, which usually are quite clear and detailed the required governance. So I think generally there is a way of doing this properly, as it were. And in a general way, I think it's probably covered over the ultimate kind of scheme of delegation and what should happen. However, if there are key concerns over having specific and detailed requirements on working in partnership and external funding, then I think a separate appendix could be incorporated within this. But also, I think it's around the overall partnership governance methodology that we've got in place. But in terms of members being able to ask questions around any elements of spend or grant funding, that is perfectly reasonable and something that I've always understood to be provided.
Councillor Fleetcote.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I agree with Councillor Lewis, because I did try and sort of delve into this myself, and I suspect that some staff at the time didn't quite understand what our own financial regulations meant. But just in case Councillor Lewis and indeed anybody else didn't know, that Magnox have agreed today to fund the business case for the Enterprise Centre in Heybridge. So that would be a nice model to make sure that we see what happens. But Chairman, that wasn't what I wanted to speak about. So I'd start by referring to members to page 56 and 3.3, and then move swiftly on from there to page 79 on my papers, C52D, where we talk about assets, key controls, value and conditions of assets, and how we actually record the conditions of assets in our asset register. And finally, Chairman, on page 87, which deals with income and expenditure, Chairman, and in particular, effective action is taken to pursue non-payment within defined timescales. Now, Chairman, I think we're all aware of the history surrounding the Clis Helig, or for those that are unaware of the boat's name, that's the boat that capsized in Burnham. I tend to like financial regulations, Chairman, probably very much like yourself, that contain caveats of summary execution and various other things, but it's no good having any of this unless the officers subscribe to it. Absolutely. Now clearly they haven't, so my question is, what's the point if we don't actually abide by our own rules? Because clearly we have problems. How big those problems are, according to the auditor, first time round, they weren't particularly big, but I understand they've changed their minds now, so we might change their name as well. But there's something not right here, Chairman, and, you know, we really do need to make sure as a local authority we abide by our financial regulations, and I think as far as creditors are concerned, we should have a separate heading here with a clear, I beg your pardon, debtors, with a clear message to the directors that they are responsible for the debtors to this local authority, because if somebody had done that, we wouldn't be in the muddle that is now the Clis Helic, Chairman. Thank you.
Well, I think the boat still might have capsized, but I agree with you. Sorry?
It has
capsized. No, but I think under those circumstances it still would have capsized, right? We still would have had to deal with the boat potentially. But look, fundamentally, I agree with you, and I think, you know, there is a way for these conditions to be tightened up a little bit, both in respect to Councillor Miss Lewis's point and also yours, Councillor Fluker. And so I don't know whether the best way of dealing with that, because I think they are slight procedural enhancements, I would say. Essentially, if you read these in a particular way, I think they already deal with our concerns, but there is probably another way of reading them, and maybe officers have used that in their defence previously. So we would like to see these tightened up in both of those areas, I think the committee is saying. Councillor Fluker.
Just, you know, for your own clarity, I think that, you know, it's also how we deal with our assets generally. I mean, we should make sure...
Well, we're coming back to that, I think, later on.
That within these financial regulations, we should say when we issue leases, it's dealt with properly. And more importantly, Chairman, that we actually know who we're dealing with, because regardless of whether the boat fell over or not, we would have at least found out who owned it, thank you, or where they lived.
Fair enough, Ms. Foy.
I think it's key, really, that there is a complete set of procedure notes to support all of the processes in here. And those procedure notes are clear for officers to have very clear and simple instructions on what they are expected to do and when they are expected to do it. Now, I think perhaps in terms of some of these key financial processes, such as income and debtors, accounts payable and creditors, and areas around assets and leases, that actually that set of procedure notes could also come to this committee as well for overall approval. Okay, it's more, I suppose, of an operational thing, but I think it would give you the comfort and the assurance that there is a really strict set of procedures and policies that are very easy to follow and should be followed in place.
Could I just say that if I can understand them, anybody could. So if they could be made million proof, it would probably suit everybody.
Councillor Boyce.
Chairman, hopefully serious stuff is completed. If I can refer you to page 46, appendix F, the first one, a small typo there that changes members into some South American dance group.
So which page is this?
Are we members?
Yeah.
Which page are you on?
Page 46. And in the absence of Councillor Savage...
Somebody needs to point those out to us in the absence of Councillor Savage, so thank you very much for that. We'll make sure that officers amend that. And just in terms of timing, Ms. Foy, would you prefer that we approve this with the changes to come, which I can potentially sign off if the committee agrees, or would the committee like to see this report back and obviously a delay therefore in it being adopted?
I'd propose it came back, and as 151's nodding, I think that's what we should do.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's process notes, sorry, have got to be done and really reviewed and updated in order to comply with the general data protection regulations. So, it, you know, they're being done at the moment, and it makes sense to bring it to the next meeting.
Councillor Elliott.
Just a small point, Chair. To a certain extent, the problems that we're incurring in Burnham, as Councillor Fluker suggested, is not going to be solved by tightening up the financial regulations. If the officers don't follow them, you can have the tightest regulations you like. I mean, so basically, should these regulations not have some type of sanctions towards officers who don't follow the rules?
Well, that's in the code of conduct already, Ms. Foy is saying, and of course, you know, if officers breach regulations, then there's always sanctions that the council can take, you know, whether that's directors or whether that's employees, and so we can always take those sanctions. Now, I think obviously our ability to sanction officers for breaches of those regulations is greater when there is greater clarity of the procedures themselves, rather than when you could make different cases, and I think that's maybe the problem in the past. And so I do think that it's better that these are written in a tighter way, so that actually if that doesn't happen in future, then we can take those sort of sanctions or look at those sort of sanctions of officers if they don't get it right. So that's there's a proposal on the on the table that these are brought back to the next meeting with those changes. Is that seconded? Agreed. Okay. On to the next item, which is item 11, the medium-term financial strategy, because we've deferred item 10.
Okay, so the medium-term financial strategy. In this paper tonight, there are a number of principles, really, for members to agree, and also I can update you on what the latest modelling has provided in terms of the headline figures and budget gaps over the next 3 years. So in terms of the headline figure, in terms of gaps, we are looking at a budget gap of the next 3 years of 976,000. This is a decrease following from what we'd seen before due to the work done when we analysed the overspend. The key point for me as we go forward is around the principles that we use to set this budget, especially for next year and how that goes onwards. The Leaders Office have recommended the use of zero-based budgeting for 18-19, which we have started to work on now. Also, really, no additional budget growth, save for really extraordinary circumstances. A review of fees and charges, a series of service reviews. There are some services I think that as directors we would like to look at to make sure that they are as cost efficient, streamlined and smooth as possible. And those will take place during those reviews taking place really starting over the next couple of months and then moving forwards into 17-18 into 18. Some further partnership working. When I talk about potentially looking at partnership working, recently we've had a new recruitment into the IT manager post. And we've actually, by working with Colchester Council, we've enabled for that individual to start immediately working part-time and part-time at Colchester, which means we've got somebody in to start changing things. But also, Colchester will continue to provide an element of mentoring support and leadership for this individual whilst they're almost developing into the role during their notice period. And I think, you know, that was from some quite positive and solid conversations with Colchester. Another example really being on how we work on our elections as well, really to maximise resources, especially for a general election where we are giving away some elements to local authorities and taking on from Chelmsford for the general election as well. And then we move on to principle around capital funding. 2016-17 saw a significant underspend in terms of the capital programme. And really, I think when we look for the following years of capital programme, we only request what we really believe, A, we are able to deliver, and B, what we need to be able to deliver. So we've had some elements that have been on the capital programme for a number of years and have been essential in every year, yet we haven't delivered them. So people have, you know, classified them as essential, but we haven't delivered them. And of course that's had an impact on our levels of investment because we've held that cash in sort of quite a liquid form. So I think capital funding being the other key principle. So that's really the principles really for agreement, I suppose, for building the budget in 18-19. And then to talk about the budget gap for 18-19 and what we've done to be able to get that budget gap. So the gap for 18-19 at the moment is £98,000. Obviously, we've got more information to come, which will come in that government settlement on about the 22nd of December. But at the moment, that is the gap. That is following adding in additional inflation, adding in the positive side of investment income, where we've started to move some of our investment income, adding in the 1% increase in terms of staff increases. Obviously, this is all to be agreed by members, but this is trying to explain how we've got to a point where there's a £98,000 gap. Incorporating the National Living Wage, as we have done before, and working on the principle that members would an increase or not of council tax. So really, I think that process is necessary to try and work out what the size of the gap is. And I think as well, really, with a gap of £98,000, we should not be looking to reserves to fund that. We should look to find that within our current envelope. So really, I think that's the gap. There are some principles for building the budget next year, and what we've done to find the number that we've found so far in terms of the assumptions around a council tax, inflation, 1% staff increase, adding in more investment income, and also taking account of the National Living Wage.
And so, just to be clear, members, we're not agreeing the policy of any of these decisions today. Those will be taken at a later point when the budget is agreed. This is simply to agree that these are principles on which to calculate the medium-term financial strategy. And to me, they certainly seem like sound principles to be using for that purpose. Members, Councillor Fluker.
I'm just looking at the recommendation, and it talks about the principles, but you know, the principle of this, Chairman, is that we've known about these big figures for quite a number of years, and we certainly haven't done much about it in the last 2 years. I mean, it would be easy now to talk about finishing off the senior management restructure. It would be easy to talk about wage creep. It would be easy to talk about the senior management platform, the cost of maintaining that. But I think as far as principles are concerned, I would have thought that an organised authority would have an overarching principle whereby the chief executive resolves to identify where savings of £976,000 can be made between now and 2021. I mean, that is the overarching principle. We have to find those savings. How we get there is certainly open to debate and approval by council, but that should always be the overarching principle. So I would propose, Chairman, in relation
that a balanced budget essentially presented for those 3 years.
Yeah,
how we would achieve a balanced budget.
Yeah, I mean, I would propose
with Chairman, options to consider for the council.
I'd hate you to miss something that I say.
It's very unlikely.
I would say always that as far as recommendation two, I'd propose that we add that. We add that to the principles list, Jim, and I'm sure that's what you were saying last time.
Well, I agree with you. You should be pleased with that.
Well, I'll stop there while I'm ahead. No, I'm sure it will be reported in the paper as well.
any other members? Councillor Ms. Lewis.
I think one of the biggest frustrations has been that we've felt we've been making a budget. We've felt that we've considered the elements that we're going to go in. We've prioritised our pinch points, and goodness knows what else the buzzwords were in any year. But we've never actually delivered what we've put into the budget. So members have avoided spending in some areas, even though they would really want to, and it would have really benefited the authority. But because there wasn't sufficient money in the budget, they didn't do it. And just to find out that we had massive underspends at the end of the year, that had we have known that money was available, the way that we might have spent and the way that we might have performed throughout the year could have been considerably different. So I think that more than setting the budget, I think the monitoring of the budget and the performance of spending what we've set out to spend is absolutely key. Otherwise, it's not a budget, it's a wish list.
No, and that's an important thing. I don't think that the council's ever got to the end of the year and looked at an underspend and thought, oh, I wish we'd spent some more money, right? But at the same time, and officers have got much better, by the way, at budgeting each year, and that underspend has come down. But I agree with you, that's one of the reasons why I don't think members have taken these figures as seriously as we probably should over the last few years, because every year the reality is actually much better than the budget has predicted. And so the reality is we probably won't need to save 976,000 over the next 3 years, because some of that money won't be spent anyway. But But nonetheless, I do subscribe to the view that Councillor Fluker suggested, which is that at least the Chief Executive and the Director of Resources and other senior officers put forward proposals such that we can look at what we would need to do to have a balanced budget within the next 3 years, and within each of those 3 years. And some of that will be better budgeting, by the way, and certainly won't be real savings as such. It will just be identifying in the budget things that we weren't going to spend anyway, but some of it will have to be real savings. And I do think that's a sensible piece of work for officers to do, so that then the council can make political decisions between each of those choices. Councillor Durham.
Thank you, Chair. That's exactly the reason why the instruction has gone out, that we now resort to zero-based budgeting. Quite honestly, the practice that we've engaged the last few years of just jiggling around with a budget that clearly hasn't really had much, hasn't produced the right outturn is crazy. So we need to wind back, start from the beginning, and that's exactly what we intend to do. You know, clearly, taking the long-term financial strategy, there are still quite a lot of unknowns in respect of government policy. We don't know where we're going to be in 2020 when RSG is abolished or by the government. We're waiting now still yet again to hear what the plans are for business rate retention or whatever fills in. So it's equally frustrating for every other authority in the country. But you know, clearly, at least starting with an accurate zero-based budget at this authority is the way to go.
Yeah, and I think, you know, particularly in relation to, you know, 2020-2021, I mean, you know, there is so much that's unknown between now and then, as you say, and you know, we just don't know whether the budget gap will be much bigger then or much smaller. And there isn't terribly much point, you know, rapidly cutting services or rapidly increasing costs to deal with a situation that is somewhat unknown that far out. But we have got to start dealing with some of these shortfalls. They are mounting up now. We've dealt with them very successfully over the last few years, but we do need to do so going forward as well. And that's why I subscribe to the
chairman. If I might also mention, it's not simply a case of cutting costs to balance the budget. We're about to launch commercialisation.
Well, increasing strategy. Income as well.
Increasing income is equally important. And agreed. In fact, we have to acknowledge that the low-hanging fruit in terms of budget cuts has already been picked, so we need to look at new avenues.
2 minutes. Councillor Elliott. Well, I don't know whether you are Councillor Elliott. You almost look like Councillor Boyce's twin brother today, but Councillor Elliott.
Thank you, Chairman. Can I just say that a few of us have been asking for zero budgeting principles to be used for a number of years, and I'm very pleased that at last we're coming round to doing some sound budgeting.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's hope it actually happens. Members, anything else? Anyone else? Okay, so with that proposal by Councillor Fluker as an addition, is that seconded? Okay, that's seconded. Are those principles agreed? Okay, very good. On to a topic which I know is also close to Councillor Fluker's heart, the Asset Management Working Group.
Okay, so agenda item 12, the Asset Management Working Group. This is really to consider the renaissance of the Asset Management Working Group, a group that was in place before. And in my view, useful for four key reasons. This is not necessarily within the terms of reference, but the first thing is that it naturally provides a lot of scrutiny over capital spend, because at each quarterly meeting, officers are asked to report where they are, what's happening, and why there are delays. I think the group really helps with a sense of accountability and responsibility for the delivery of projects. Again, coming every quarter and having to, you know, for officers delivering projects to sit in front of members to take challenging questions, I think just focuses the mind and concentration. The third element, and one of the key ones for me, is it really enables a bit of almost soft testing of things with members to get their overall opinion across committees about whether to take something forward or not. And really, I think it enables linkages across committees around capital expenditure, assets and planning. So those are really some of the areas that I think probably personally as 151 officer I believe it adds. I think that I wouldn't like to say if the asset management working group had been in place that we wouldn't have seen breakdowns and controls that have taken place. I don't have the benefit of that. But I do think it will help me as Director of Resources in terms of ensuring that the controls are in place across directorates in both delivering capital expenditure but also testing out ideas and discussions.
And members, I recall being fairly ambivalent about this group being disbanded before, but I know that members of the committee were obviously voted in support of it being abolished. I know that since then members have had many members have had a change of view, and I think that's to be welcomed. I certainly support this committee being re-established. I think that, as Ms. Foy says, officers will be useful. I do think that in order to make sure that the broadest membership can take part in this committee, it's sensible for it to meet in the evening, or at least by conference call if possible. But I think re-establishing it is a sensible way forward, members. I think actually Councillor Boyce was first.
Yes, Chairman. I agree entirely with the reconstitution of the Asset Management Working Group. I don't agree with the evening meetings. I think that daytime meetings are appropriate for this group. And one other question I have is on the, where it says the council's constitution will need to be changed under 3.6. Well, 3.6 only talks about holding the meetings in the evening. I assume that there would be something more robust going into the constitution, which will actually include perhaps the terms of reference of this group as well.
Councillor Ms Lewis?
It sort of follows on from what Councillor Boyce has said, and I think personally it should be an evening meeting. That's not a problem, but I do know that a lot of our a lot of our more vital members are people who are still working and could do with and what I would want to sense test is, could we have circulated the report that members were given, could we have it recirculated, that members were given to disband this group? And I think that if we actually look at why we disbanded it, can we then sense test that we're not simply seesawing, but that the circumstances are now different, or that circumstances can be made and improved to mean that it can be a good and viable committee? And we can only do that by comparing with why we got rid of it. Thank you.
Councillor Durham, and then Councillor.
Well, thank you. But one of the very good reasons why this should be reconstituted is, of course, the embarkation of our commercialisation strategy. If we're going to look at possibly acquiring investment property, this is absolutely crucial. The only thing I was slightly reticent about evening meetings, not wishing to incur additional cost to the authority, but I would leave that open to the members to decide.
Councillor Elliott.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, that was the point I was going to make. But during the day, I mean, before the asset management, we always met during the day because there were more officers available. And also, if something came up during the meeting, we could ask for an officer to come down and talk to us, which you can't do at all.
Yep. Councillor Fleeker.
Chairman, as far as that's concerned, I mean, we also used to have some quite junior officers used to come along who had specific knowledge of quite unusual assets that we were trying to manage. Like, so, you know, my feeling is daytime meetings were very good, but perhaps we could appease you if you could come at 5 p.m. or perhaps even 7:30. I'm a.m. I haven't got any problem with that. But I do remember that these meetings were actually very well attended by members, and I just wanted, for clarity, to go to page 161, the appendix 1, about the makeup of the working group, because I'm sure that there were often more than six members in attendance, and I do wonder whether or not we should expand this out slightly to include the audit committee as well, because there is some kind of impact there with audit and what they do with asset management, and I think a link in there would be good. But in case anybody's thinking, I certainly don't want to see it politically balanced. Thank you. I like.
Well, I think since it's essentially a subgroup of this committee, it seems slightly, well, okay, a working group that's more associated with this committee than, I mean, by definition, we're the committee that's recreating this rather than either of the other committees. It seems to me that this committee should send more members to it than the other committees.
I have to.
It deals with matters, but I have assets. The last time I checked, are part of the finance and corporate services committee, and it was this committee that disbanded it. So, I mean, members may disagree with that view, but it would certainly make sense from a practical perspective.
Chairman, if I may disagree with you, I mean, I don't mind whether you have the whole committee as members of this, but this is a recommendation to the council. It is not primarily this committee. It is the council that will be appointing and who.
You are a council voice, but it's a recommendation from this committee.
Oh, yes.
From the Community Services Committee to council.
It's still going to be a council working group, and the biggest holder of properties is not necessarily the finance committees, but P&L and community and leisure.
Yeah,
enormous amounts of our assets.
Well, I'm simply suggesting to the committee that I'm recalling one of the reasons I think for the abolition of this working group before, which was that proposals would be discussed at this working group that was equally comprised of a different members from each of the other committees, without necessarily a huge amount of kind of financial focus around some of the issues that they would debate. They would then come to this committee, and we would overturn a view that was taken at the Asset Management Working Group, and then council would support us in that view. And so all I'm saying is if this Asset Management Working Group is to be effective and for its decisions to actually likely be implemented, I suspect it needs more financial support and more members who are financially sophisticated than necessarily this membership suggests. But that's my suggestion. If members disagree, then I think we might just find, and in 6 months or 12 months' time, that people find that this working group isn't making much progress again. But
I don't know what the Board and Burnham will make of our unsophisticated members.
Chairman, I'm sure when we come to a vote in the moment, you'll find out yourself whether you're sophisticated
okay,
or not.
Okay, fine. Well, look, however you wish to. Do members agree to recommendation?
Yes, that's all we can do.
Members agree to recommendation.
Including the circulation of the old report, I would like that as part of this recommendation.
Well, that will go
please.
To council alongside the recommendation if you'd like that to happen. Very good. Okay, fine. Any other items of business that are urgent? None. Exclusion of the public and press. We're going green to resolve that under Section 100A, Subsection 4 of the Local Government Act 1972, public be excluded from the meeting for the following items of business on the grounds that they involve the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph... as described in paragraph 1 and 2 of part 1 of Schedule 12A to the Act, and that this satisfies the public interest test, and 3 and 5 apparently. Is that proposed and seconded and agreed? Excellent.